This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Joined by Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, aka Jimmy Nutter, James Nutter. What is your YouTube called? The Fantasy Network.
The Fantasy Network. That
there
is correct.
There we go. That's what I was looking for. All of it. Ah, Jimmy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to talk some video games. I haven't had a lot of time to play recently, so this is going to be like an outlet for me a bit.
Yes, that's true. Me as well. What have you been playing lately? What have you been into recently?
So honestly, the weird thing is I've been playing a lot less, but I've been watching my wife play Horizon Zero Dawn, and I have been having a blast watching her beat that game. So she's about 40 or 50 hours in. She's doing all the side quests, like everything, and she's like, I just don't want it to be over, but we are now at the final mission. So I've been reading and then looking up and watching her play that. And it's been a cool experience. I'm excited for her to beat in the second one coming out later this year. Will be really cool. And me personally, last thing I played was Valheim. I've been on the Valheim train. I reconnect with some of my old buddies I used to play WoW with and some other games. And I gotta say, it's very soothing. It's okay. Very, very soothing. Okay. I like it.
I have been into Bravely Default 2.
Ah.
And let me tell you, wow, I love this game. It's the only way I know how to put it. I got the original for the 3DS, and I just didn't really get into it very much. I really appreciated the art style, the art style is okay. It's kind of it's almost like chibi, I guess is the word, you know, you kind of use to describe it.
Yeah.
Which actually I will say for anyone who follows me on Twitter, I did push back on the Pokemon Diamond and Pearl remakes because it uses that art style, but I explained my reasoning on Twitter for not liking that. But so when I say that I like the chibi art style here, people may be like, okay, well, hold on a second. But I do like the art style here. The soundtrack to this game is amazing. The story is it just works. That's all. It's cute. It's fun. But the soundtrack to this game,
I've heard it's excellent.
That is where it is at, and I am obviously a huge sucker for soundtracks. So, we are talking today. Jimmy and I are going to talk our three favorite. Although it might only end up, I think we might have a shared thing in our list today. So, our three favorite video game franchises. Yeah. So I gotta say, actually, this one was kind of hard for me because I really had to do some thinking and really sort of piece it all together in my mind. And this is sort of the logic. And then I'll let you explain your logic, Jimmy, and then we can start a list. And I'll say a few reasons why I didn't select some of the franchises I thought I would have. So I kind of went about this and I said, let me think about this in terms of a total franchise, because I think that there are series where I really like one of the games out of it, but I'll play I've played one or two, right? Then, yeah. You know, I could easily say let's Madden, for example. But again, I always just want to say it because technically Madden probably is my favorite franchise because it's my
same here
de-stressor game. I don't even really sort of view it like that. It's kind of like how I like to joke, because I always like to think, you know, truly technically, if you have to really get down to the nuts and bolts and view things, you know, technically, right? But so when I think about that, yes, technically Madden probably is my favorite game. Just like technically, you know, my dad is a hardcore PC gamer because he plays hours of Farmville every day, right? That is a game. It is on the computer. So there you go. He's a hardcore PC gamer.
PC Master Race.
He's a PC Master Race, man. You know, playing Farmville, right? It's like, is Solitaire the greatest game ever? Well, maybe, because it's the game that everybody plays, right?
Great campaign.
Seriously, great campaign. I have thought of jokingly making a, when I bought my new graphics card in my computer, which in the last summer was, I think, was like the top of the line, the 5700 XT AMD was like the top at that point, like the top of the line AMD graphics card, and just being like, oh, look at Solitaire, look how fast it runs, and like, you know, like, but anyway, so yeah, so technically speaking, that was a thought. Then I thought, what about a franchise like Destiny for me? Like Destiny 1, I was like, probably my favorite game ever, just because of the awesome multiplayer experience I had with playing with people online, and it was so much fun. Then the second game was kind of cool. I didn't dive into as much, but it's like, well, do I like 50% of this? So for me, the way I thought about it was, I was like, I need to like minimally 4 games in the series, and they need to be games that I pick up and play often, was the way that I sort of viewed this. Because, you know, I could say, like, let's say, like, the Batman Arkham series, for example. I did not choose this. That has about 5 games, I think, in the franchise, if you include the DS game. And I was like, yeah, I loved all of those, but I'm just not really ever compelled to be like, oh, I want to dive back into that. And then I thought about maybe, like, Uncharted. Okay, Uncharted, I think, has 6 games, if you include the Vita games, because it's the 4 main games, and I think there's 2 spinoff games. And I was like, yeah, I love those. But again, I'm not like, oh, I want to re-dive into Uncharted all the time. So had to really think about it. And some franchises that I talk about a lot on here, I didn't choose. So I thought I'd start with a couple I did not choose. I thought Street Fighter would make my list. Did not make my list. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that, I don't know, because really there's so many different versions of the game, it ends up being like, well, how many games are actually in the franchise and how many do I actually play? Right. And it's like, okay, well, which one do I really go? Cause I think there's like, I do own probably like 20 different versions of Street Fighter 2.
That's a lot.
Well, I think there's like 50 different versions of Street Fighter 2 if you really want to get technical about it. But you know, normally it's like, yeah, I like Street Fighter 5. I didn't get into as much as I did like Street Fighter 4 and certainly Street Fighter 3. And stuff like that. So Street Fighter did not make my list. Resident Evil, I kind of thought might make my list. The big one that I excluded was The Legend of Zelda. Did not.
I thought that'd be your number one.
Nope. I hadn't really thought about it. It's probably my number 4 and my number 5. Also, Final Fantasy did not make my list. And then I also went about it in the mindset of, it needs to be sort of, when I think about it as like the franchise, or I was kind of in my mind also thinking like series as well. So it's like, well, I love certain Star Wars games. I don't love the whole thing. And so it's kind of like kind of in for me, it was I was in my mindset was kind of in the midst of like franchise slash series. But certainly I think for some, you know, if you want to say like, well, I love this slew of the Mega Man games and those are my absolute favorite, I think it'd be okay if you chose Mega Man as your favorite. And I didn't choose that, but Mega Man's so big that it's like, well, yeah, no. So I don't know, just
yeah,
kind
of one or like, can one or two pick up the series? Can like right. two really good Mega Mans like elevate?
Right.
It's a hard question.
So for me, I thought about more. I was like, if they dropped another game tomorrow, would I buy it? Like, hands down, yes.
That was
so,
my big one.
So that's how I kind of chose my three. So what are some franchises you did not choose that you thought would make your list?
So I'll be honest. It's funny listening to your kind of rubric scale or whatever, because that's kind of where I'm at too. Like without a doubt, the first time when I was thinking franchise and like really thinking about what had a profound impact on me and like how many hours that have been just thrown away. I mean, it's Madden without a doubt. I mean, I remember playing Madden 2003 for 8 hours. Like
right.
I had a
right,
franchise
right.
where there was no existing players
right.
left.
Oh, dude,
in the NFL.
I have hundreds of those. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, but I said I'm not going to include that. And for me, I really didn't want to do trilogies. I wanted, kind of like you, I said four games. The only thing that's different is I don't necessarily have to pick up some of the older ones in the ones I did pick, because there's some things that just don't, like, they're harder to play on hardware now or something like that.
Right.
But I thought that I would include Halo. I thought I would include Halo, and I actually didn't include Halo. Mainly because I didn't play like ODST more than maybe 5 minutes that I can remember.
Oh, that's a shame.
And I didn't
ODST's
have a
good.
Yeah, and you know, I remember like people really enjoying it. I just didn't play a lot of it. I played Halo 1, 2, and 3 a ton. I got Halo 4 for Christmas, which I talked about on a previous podcast. It was a fun experience. But like Halo 5, I didn't really get to play that, you know. And then there's the other games that were spinoffs of that I didn't get to play too much. I played a little bit of Reach. I enjoyed Reach quite a bit, but so I kind of left it off. And another one that I unfortunately just haven't played enough of, and this bothers me because I think once I go through, which is, as I thought about this, the next game I want to play is in this series, I'm going to be playing more Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. I've really only played the original 7 and then the 7 remake. And then I played the MMO, which was cool. It was fine. Mm-hmm. It was whatever. But I just didn't feel like I have enough time or experience in it to truthfully list it on my all-time list. So it was difficult. Another one I did not include was, and this is hard. This one was hard, is Mass Effect. And it's mainly due to the fact that even though I didn't hate Andromeda like the rest of the internet did, I actually thought it was pretty good. The fact that they just discontinued it, like, I'll never play that game again now.
Yeah.
Because there was a really good
storyline
with the mom.
You will pick up the Mass Effect remastered trilogy that's coming. Yeah.
And the new one that apparently they're making. They're making a Mass Effect 4 or whatever. So that was on there. Dragon Age, you know, in the same breath of BioWare, was definitely something to consider.
Right.
But those are some I left off. And another really hard one to leave off, Grand Theft Auto.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, you know,
I didn't play Vice City.
Oh my God, Vice City's so good.
I didn't play Vice City. I played 3.
For me, it's like I played 3. I loved it. Played Vice City. I thought it was the best. San Andreas was fun. For me, it was like a big sandbox. You could do a lot more. I just didn't get into as much. It was almost too big. And like,
yeah,
it's a marvel that the game is on the PlayStation 2. I think that game by far would be the best to, if they're ever going to do this, just remake it outright. But, and of sort, you know, certainly they, I believe that, what is it? Grand Theft Auto 5 takes place in San Andreas and it's, stuff like that. So I do think that game, if you were to really remake one, that's the one I would sort of remake. Cause I mean, it pushed the PS2. So far beyond anything it was capable of. If you're gonna dive more into Final Fantasy, I think 10 is kind of the place to go.
That's where I was gonna go next, so I'm glad to hear that.
I think you would like 10. 15's great. I think 15's it sounds so different. That's a conversation for another time. So let's dive in here. I'll go first. I think I'll save the one that I think is pretty obvious and I think is the one we both have. We could save that one. so I thought a lot about this, and I said, you know, this is just so obvious. Whether you want to include the main series of games or you want to include all of the side games, it pretty much doesn't matter. And this one's such a no-brainer. I mean, this is everyone's going to be like, this is in everyone's list. And I mean, it's Mario. I mean, you just can't. I mean, how do you go literally anywhere else? Let's get the obvious one out of the way first. I mean, Super Mario Brothers is probably the first video game I ever played. I mean, whether it's Mario 1, Mario 2, Mario 3, Mario World, I always will fire up those games from time to time and just dive in. Now they're on the Switch. It doesn't matter. Anytime I get a new sort of like emulation thing, it's always like Mario 3, Super Mario World. Then you go beyond that and you get to like Mario Kart and Mario Tennis and Mario Golf and Dr. Mario. It just doesn't matter. So as a franchise, I mean, Mario is just, it's there. It's the obvious choice that I knew. I was like, yeah, this, you got to pick it up. I mean, I bought Super Mario 3D All-Stars, haven't even really touched it, but I was like, well, I just have to have it, obviously, which is Mario Galaxy, which is actually my like least favorite. I tried to get into it again.
Really?
Yeah, and I know some other people have had this too. It's like it's the motion I just find so it's so weird. It's like you're running around the planet. It kind of gives me motion sickness. I don't know if that. I think I've heard some other people say that too about that game. And maybe if I get off like once I get past like some of the levels and stuff like that. So I don't know. But I know a lot of people consider that to be their favorite. That's the thing about this franchise. It's so good. You can literally go pick any game. And
I know people that like Odyssey the most. People love
it. I love Odyssey. I think more and more, man, 3D World is becoming my favorite, especially with the new one they just released, the new version of it with the Bowser's Fury where you just run around as Cat Mario. My God, the game is
that the one where you can do co-op?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to pick that up.
I picked it up on Switch. My girlfriend has since stolen my Switch. She did when she's now got a couple games that she's hardcore into Luigi's Mansion and this. She just calls it Cat Mario, which also is the same thing my, you know, like 4-year-old nephew calls it Cat Mario. But that game really is great. I mean, and I've been preaching about this game for years on this podcast. You know, when it originally came out on the Wii U. I mean, there's so much. Oh, there's just so much jam packed into it. I'm so glad that they brought this game out on Switch. Had this game been a launch title for the Nintendo Wii U, the Wii U probably could have been in a different place. Have been a totally different system. But yeah, so I mean that's there. I mean, so I'm just gonna ramble off a few other of the games where it's like if I'm gonna pick up and play a Mario game, where am I going? Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, that's obviously right there. Dr. Mario NES Classic, boom, I love it. Dr. Mario is always a pick up and play for me. Super Mario World and Super Mario 3, I go back and forth on, really. I've said for years, I think Super Mario Brothers 3 is the greatest game ever made. I think that has changed over time. I think I have another game, which I think at this point I can say is the best game ever made, but I'll save that for another podcast. But I mean, it's just so classic.
But now,
Super Mario Sunshine, I adore. I'm glad that's the whole reason I really bought the thing. 64 is not one I really can find myself getting into. I didn't play it back in the day, so when I try to go back to it, I'm kind of like, I see why people love it, but I think it's just for me. It's one of those things where it's kind of like, what's your entry point and stuff like that. And so I just skipped it and went. Because I got a 64 late in its life cycle. But yeah, I loved Odyssey. I hope, you know, we're gonna get something new. And it's just anytime I pick up a Mario game, Mario Super Sluggers for the Wii, the baseball game is freaking awesome. Super Strikers, the soccer game is great. You just can't go wrong.
Paper Mario.
I have the one for the Wii, Super Paper Mario, I love, and the Origami King, the one that came out recently, the sort of RPG. And then Super Mario RPG. People love that one. So obviously, Mario's the king. He is still the granddaddy of video games, and this was sort of my obvious choice of franchises for my number one.
I had a feeling you were going to pick Mario.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. Okay. And now I feel kind of bad. Here's the thing. I played Mario as a kid, like we all did, mm-hmm. right? But I've played Mario Kart throughout my whole life. Mario Party, I think, which one was it on the GameCube that was phenomenal? Was it Mario Party 6?
I don't know. I know that 5 was on the, I believe 4 and 5 were on the GameCube, which both
maybe
of
I'm thinking of 4.
Both of those, I played one of them. I always forget which one it is. Mario Party 2.
Same.
Mario Party 2 for the 64 is like, that to me is the, because I've played a handful. I played, I think it was 8 for the Wii, but God, there's so many.
It was fun.
There's so many. But Mario Kart 2, Mario Party 2 is the one I always remember because that's the one. Because the first one was okay, but the second one was where you got like the cowboy hat and you got like a hootenanny and you know, it's ridiculous. And it's, yeah.
I mean, for me, I Mario Party, whichever one I did play on the GameCube, I mean, maybe 1,000 hours with my friend. I mean, oh, I just, yeah. I can't even explain to you how much I love that. And I would have picked Mario as my number one or just picked him in general. But I feel like I've missed out on so – like I didn't play Mario Sunshine. You know, I didn't play personally Galaxy. I just know a lot of people mm-hmm. have. And I played a little bit of Odyssey. But like I just feel like I haven't went back and got that full Mario experience in such a long time that I didn't feel comfortable picking it. I felt like I'd be a poser for mm-hmm. Mario, and I didn't want to do that. If you were to recommend – a Mario game to somebody that wants to quote unquote get back to Mario.
I would say 3D World, even over Odyssey.
So what can you play that on?
So it's Switch. It's on Switch.
So is it, okay.
The new cool. one. It just came out. It's
the co-op one. Okay.
It's yeah. Yep. Yeah. Odyssey's a single player. Yeah, I would recommend 3D World because it's level based. Mm-hmm. It's not like sort of open world. The cat suit is just so much fun. And there's so much sort of, there's just so many tie-ins, you know, it is a blend really of like Super Mario, all the Mario games really, like you have the Toad houses from Super Mario 3. There's like sort of these race levels, which plays like the Mario Kart music. The Captain Toad treasure tracker levels, actually it turned into its own game. Are started in that game. Playing with friends is so much fun because after you complete each level, whoever gets the highest score gets a crown to wear in the next level. And you can knock the crown off of them.
Oh,
and then
no.
you'll have the crown.
and my wife are definitely gonna play
right.
this.
And then the Bowser's Fury thing is great too because you run around as a cat the whole time, and it's perfect. The cat power up is by far the best Mario power up ever made. It's not even close.
Cat Mario.
Seriously, it is. It is so much fun. And when you get to the end of the level, they all say like meow, and it's like charming to death. And
tremendous.
The soundtrack is great. Super Bell Hill, which is like the first level music, I think is my favorite Mario music. Period. It looks great. It's yeah, that's I would recommend that. And because it's level based, you can pick up and play a level, put the Switch down,
I like
and
that
do something else, not yeah. like open world. Well, God, I gotta do this and I gotta do that. Yeah,
yeah, I get it. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I guess I'm picking it up.
Yep, there we go. Always recommendations.
Always.
All right, Jimmy, I'm gonna toss it over to you. What do you got?
I'm going to get this one out of the way first. This is definitely like number three, and I'm going to get it out of the way because people are going to roll their eyes and whatever. I don't care. Call of Duty.
Okay.
It's Call of Duty, guys. It's Code Red, Mountain Dew's caps getting screwed off, punch in the code, get the skins. No, seriously, though, Call of Duty has had more great games than it's had bad, in my opinion. And it's not a franchise I'm ever very happy with anymore. Even just decisions they make. But when I look back at the body of work and I look at the hours spent and the time of enjoyment, and does each one generally pique my interest? Absolutely. And I think a lot of people forget, and I believe this still holds true today. I don't play them anymore, but the campaigns in the early Call of Duty, Call of Duty 1 to Modern Warfare, first two Black Ops.
Yeah,
tremendous.
I would say after Black Ops 2, the campaigns to me started really going downhill.
I haven't played any since then, so.
But the campaign in Modern Warfare 1 and Modern Warfare 3, the campaign just kind of let me down a bit. But the campaign of Modern Warfare 1 and 2 are so good.
They can be made into movies.
They're phenomenal, especially given the time they came out. The set pieces are huge. You know, like exploding. Everything about those was good in games that at the time were just slowly starting to tick towards we don't even care about campaigns and people are just here for the multiplayer. The campaign, and actually people sort of forget this, that starts in World at War and goes into Black Ops and Black Ops 2. Again, Black Ops 2, the campaign I didn't like as much, but the obviously World at War was fun, and then Black Ops original campaign was awesome.
I mean, tremendous. Tremendous. I mean, they had Ronald Reagan this past year.
I know, so, seriously.
But you know, I think that people, you know, Call of Duty is like a meme, right? It's like Madden in the sense that we get one every year. But again, when you look back, there are Ghost was terrible. But
I liked it. I liked Ghost.
I mean, the multiplayer was fine. Yeah. I just remember having a lot of issues. I played it on PC, and I had a lot of issues with like performance, so I just kind of put it down.
Oddly enough, played it on Wii U. So.
Wow. Yeah. You're the only person.
No, it was me and like five other people. It was great.
You know, it just, I think about whenever I walked past the 360 display and they had Call of Duty 2 on display. And I remember my dad going, wow, like that looks real, you know? And then I got it home and I remember playing the campaign over and over and over. And then, you know, you'd play multiplayer with your friends. I didn't have online at the time. But I'd play with my friends on LAN or whatever, and it was just a blast. And each year, you know, that was the highlight of my years. Mm-hmm. It really was, you know, it even more so than Halo at a point. And this is what bumped Halo out, which is kind of hurts me to say, but it's just the truth. I mean, Call of Duty then established like a lot of the mainstream multiplayer like facets that we know and love, right? Like kill streaks and such. And I know other games like Quake's been around for a long time. I played a lot of Quake and all that, but I don't know. Call of Duty's had like a very massive pillar of my childhood, teen years, and then into my adult. It has been literally through almost every phase of my life that I played Call of Duty. And I won't lie, every single year, even though I know they make a lot of bad decisions, I'm like, ah, man, COD's coming out next week. Might have to check it out.
Right.
Might have to check it out. So I know a lot of people would probably be like, ugh, that's so meta, but I don't think so.
And actually, Call of Duty is a franchise that I don't really ever talk about a lot here on this podcast. So no, it's good. I appreciate you for saying that. You know, what I think actually about that, when I think about that franchise, actually, it kind of had this perfect timing, kind of a run. Because you had the PC game, and so they were doing well. And then Call of Duty Modern Warfare came out, and at literally right time, so it's, I think it was after Halo 3, because Halo 3 was sort of like a launch title for the 360. And so it comes out right as everyone's really kind of beginning to get into the 360 and PS3, as well as sort of online gaming. That was really when I remember online gaming becoming a thing that like everyone's starting to do on PC. And it really was kind of unchallenged at the time.
Yeah.
Because the other game that was coming out was Gears of War. And then Gears of War started this whole trend of everyone making third-person shooters.
That's true.
And so then a lot of people switched from first-person shooters to third, so Call of Duty kind of stood there by itself. And
it had Bad Company. Bad Company was the only other show in town.
Right. Right. And so, and then this is really sort of before Battlefield, right? Battlefield Bad Company, but really before like Battlefield 3 and Battlefield 4 kind of came onto the stage. And Halo was kind of like in like a lull because Halo 3 had come out and then it was way before Halo 4. So it really kind of came out perfect time, perfect place. Also, I think their set piece of, you know, given where we were in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's what the game is about, is like, and so I think that it was like the perfect time, perfect place for it. then I think the franchise got so big and there was so much money and there was arguments obviously between Infinity War and all that stuff, and there's sort of a lot of that internal stuff that kind of cost them. And then I do think it has, yeah, it probably has gone down. And now there's just so many more options for sort of online games where it's like Overwatch and all this stuff that's free to play now too, right? I mean, Fortnite
and how fast they switch
everything, you know. Yeah.
Game of the month is a real thing, and I know I sound like a boomer right now, but it, for somebody that I don't have as much time as I did when I was 16, right. You know, it's actually a easier choice for me to go, I'm just going to play Call of Duty.
Right.
Because I know what I'm getting myself into for the most part. Right. Sometimes I throw in some jetpack, stuff, but
right.
Me, right. You know, whatever. I just don't use it.
Right, 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 right. Okay. All right. So, back to me. So this is one I'm pretty sure you don't have if I had to take a guess. Now, okay. I started with a pretty obvious one in Mario. So I'm going to choose sort of another pretty obvious one. I am, of course, Jimmy, I think I'm like 5 years older. How old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30. Okay. So we're the same age. I'm 32.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're pretty close.
We're pretty close. So, you know, growing up a kid in the 90s, there was this little thing called the console war, okay? You were either a Nintendo fanboy or you played Sega, like me.
Yeah.
Okay? And so...
You were a Sega fan.
I'm a hardcore Sega fan. Still am to this day. And so, let me just say, I love me Mario, okay? And Mario's great, and I will always pick up the next Mario game. But the moment I sat down on my Sega Genesis and I popped in Sonic the Hedgehog and the Green Hill Zone came out and I'm playing as the Blue Blur and I'm running fast, you know, the fastest thing alive, okay, Sonic the Hedgehog, too fast for the naked eye, Sonic the Hedgehog, okay? I had Sonic toys. I watched the cartoons. I have been a diehard Sonic fan to this day. And yes, have there been terrible games in the franchise? Absolutely. But do I still buy them and play them? Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Sonic 1 is actually probably one of my least favorite in the series. But Green Hill Zone is so iconic. It's obviously amazing. But Sonic 2 is where the franchise gets really good. You get Tails, Miles per hour. It's a pun. Get it?
I remember this, yeah.
Emerald Hill Zone as opposed to Green Hill Zone in the first game, right? The ability to go supersonic. Then later, when Sonic 3 came out, and you got Sonic and Knuckles, and you could sort of attach games on top, right? You put Sonic 3 on Sonic and Knuckles, they attach because it's one full game because that's the way it was intended. But, hey, let's split these games up. We can make super music. Also, the soundtrack of that game, obviously, a lot of people who don't know this, Michael Jackson worked on. So that's a big.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, look it up. Yeah, Michael Jackson worked on Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles soundtrack. It's why you often don't see Sonic 3 or Sonic & Knuckles included in Sega Genesis collections. Sega is just kind of like, whatever, just steps back from it. You think those would be pretty obvious choices to add in when you're just like, we're just throwing these ROMs on here. Yeah, it's a big deal. Listen to Ice Cap Zone. I forget the other Michael Jackson song you should listen to that corresponds with it, but it's like pretty close. And then there's all sorts of, like, I mean, these are old, you know, sort of like ancient rumors and stuff you'd hear. Some of it I think has to do, there's rumors that Michael Jackson got upset with the Genesis sound chip and they couldn't make the music that he wanted. Of course, there is the game Michael Jackson's Moonwalker that Sega themselves, you know, produced. So he's a big star. It's the 90s. This is back when everyone's just trying to throw a star on the cover of their video game, like Mike Tyson's Punch Out and stuff like that,
right?
So that they can sort of make things, we want these stars, especially Sega was doing this. Sega was getting anybody who had any sort of a name, especially for their sports series, and was like, let's just throw Joe Montana on. Let's just, you know, George Foreman's boxing, whatever, doesn't matter. And so sort of just throw them on there. So anyway, so Sonic, yeah, so Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which to me is the best game in the series still to this day. It is so good. You can level select. You can play as Sonic or Knuckles or Tails or Sonic and Tails. There's actually a story that's actually kind of told pretty well in there in a platformer game, which is really interesting. Playing multiple sides, you get different endings. You get the Chaos Emeralds in, and then you can collect the Hyper Emeralds or the Super Emeralds, which turns you into Hyper Sonic. And he's like faster and stronger and all of these things. And it ends with an epic battle in space, and it's super, super cool. You fight Metal Sonic, the whole deal. It's great. And the soundtracks to all the Sonic games are just phenomenal. They are. Even in the terrible, some of the worst games you can play, the soundtracks in Sonic games are always top notch. Then you go to what I still consider, and I still remember. I remember this. 9999, the Sega Dreamcast launching. Okay, my brother, yeah. We got one sort of kind of for Christmas, as well as just that coming out. My brother's birthday was kind of then. So I've kind of talked about this as well, you know, like, so I've talked, my house burnt down when I was a kid, so I kind of like had a PlayStation. And then like lost it, whatever. And then like we got like another Sega Genesis. So I grew up with a Genesis, then got like a Sega Genesis. Like somebody at like our church or whatever had like gave me whatever because they knew we were into video games. So we got like a Sega Genesis. And I kind of played that for like more years than I think a lot of other people played. So I kind of feel like I went from the Sega. So from the Sega generation, the Sega Genesis generation to the Dreamcast generation is how I've always kind of viewed it.
The Dreamcast.
And going from seeing Sonic in like full bore 3D Emerald Coast, the opening level where you're getting chased by the whale and it's like smashing through, and you've got like the sun, cool little, you know, those like the rings when you look at the sun, you get those like that effect, and seeing like that for the first time and everything. So good. Sonic Adventure 2, and then playing it on the GameCube with Sonic Adventure 2 Battle. So much fun. City Escape, first level. You're like skateboarding down basically San Francisco, and you can do flips, and you get chased by the truck. So much, man. And then I think the series kind of went through some lulls, but I still picked it up. I still played it. Sonic the Hedgehog 2006, which is probably one of the worst 10 video games ever made. I played it. Okay. Is there a scene where Sonic like kisses a human girl? Yes. Is it awkward? Yes. But it's in there. Okay. Sorry. Then they're like, okay, we got to kind of fix Sonic. So you go to Sonic Unleashed, where half the game is really good, and they said we're gonna go back to Sonic like being sort of, you know, fast and everything, but then we're also going to have him be a werehog, and that was kind of dumb. But then you go to Sonic Colors, and this is where Sonic starts to come back a little bit. You play Sonic Colors for the Wii, and you're like, okay, this is pretty good. Then comes Sonic Generations, which I think is like top five Sonic game period, where they said we're gonna sort of blend it. It's amazing, throwback levels to everything. And then, of course, Sonic Mania is just freaking phenomenal. I mean, it's perfect. So, yeah, love it. And I'll continue to buy it forever.
That seems like such an obvious pick, right? But I actually did not have that anywhere on my radar because I haven't played a ton of Sonic's games.
Right.
Sonic games. I played number two, and I played the Dreamcast one, mm-hmm. and that was it. I've never played anything else.
Well, let me
Sonic.
Give you here. Let me give you an obscure Sonic recommendation. Okay.
All right.
Because I know the type of things you like. And when I explain this game to you, you can go ahead and get on Wikipedia because you're going to be like, I cannot believe this is real. Okay. There is a Sonic RPG. Okay.
Okay.
It's called Sonic and the Dark Brotherhood. You just type it in and Sonic wait till you see who developed it. Who, if you had to take a guess, who developed this? It's not Sega.
I'm going to pick.
And it's like they're a big time RPG maker.
Bethesda.
Okay, just go take a look.
Sonic Dark
Brotherhood.
Brotherhood. BioWare?
Yeah! There is a Sonic RPG made by BioWare.
Excuse me, sir?
I know, and it's really good.
Wait, it's on the DS?
Yeah, it's on the DS, so you can emulate it if you want.
Oh my god. Dude, that's a wild fact.
It's a very obscure game. It's one of those games you're like, I cannot believe this exists.
BioWare made a lot of games that people don't realize.
Right.
Speaking of BioWare, just random note real quick. They're remaking KOTOR? Is that true?
There's rumors about it. There's rumors about it, yeah. Nothing's super confirmed yet, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, why make that whenever you could just make Sonic?
And the Dark Brotherhood 2. I know.
And the Dark Brotherhood 2. Yeah.
Well, there's rumors going around right now, and these rumors have existed for quite some time, but there seems to be some more validity to it now. This would be a very enormous acquisition. Is Xbox is rumored right now to be looking at buying more studios? So their big one. So because they had bought smaller studios, but then they bought Bethesda.
Yeah.
Like that's a Bethesda. Big purchase. Well, people forget how enormous Microsoft is. I think they forget, like.
Yeah,
Microsoft.
I mean, they're one of the biggest
like
companies
top
in the
five
world.
Biggest company in the world. I mean, it's not. I mean, like Sony does not come close to Microsoft. I mean, it's like yeah. Microsoft's up there with like Apple and Google.
Yeah,
and
well,
Amazon. I mean,
so
they've
from
got
a developer
the cash.
From a developer's perspective, really, your big four, and this trips a lot of people out though, is Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Facebook, and Apple's not at the table because they don't do web hosting.
Right.
So, like, Microsoft's one of those people who really have a stake in the internet.
No, they have a stake, yeah.
And it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
people forget.
Yeah, so,
they just forget.
So, right now, they're rumored to be looking at buying Sega. And these rumors have been around for years and years. But I think there's more validity to it after they bought Bethesda. But again, keep in mind, Bethesda, that's American. Like, Japan, they're weird when it comes to selling stuff. It's so, and the other one is Konami.
It's different.
Which we might get to here in a bit. But but that would be very interesting. Konami, I could see not selling themselves outright, but I could see them selling off intellectual properties, which would be interesting.
Yeah,
I don't know that Sega would be willing to sell. Sega's actually a lot bigger than people think. Because a couple years ago they bought Atlus when Atlus was up for sale. Which Atlus makes the Persona games. They make a lot of. I mean, they're big. I mean, they have a lot of big franchises. And Sega was the one who ended up stepping in and buying them, which I actually thought was perfect. I thought that was a perfect purchase, for them. And Sega said they don't know where else. So I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I think if Microsoft did buy Sega, I would be much. I think Microsoft buying Sega would actually be better than even like Nintendo buying Sega. I do think like Nintendo would obviously do like Sonic right and stuff like that. I also think Microsoft would do well with them because they're very open to letting other people use like their intellectual properties and stuff like that. So
yeah, you'd probably see a little bit more of a different spin on Sonic and other things.
Pun intended.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Jimmy. Okay. So what's your next one?
My second one, and I feel bad because I feel like I picked a lot of like recent stuff. Even though Call of Duty goes pretty far back now, this is a more of a younger. I'll call it a younger series because there's not that many entries. It's like at the bare minimum for a number. But when we're talking about quality and talking about going out and buying the game tomorrow. Witcher.
That's what I thought. I was like, you might.
It's
Witcher.
And dude, from Witcher 1, like the story just encapsulated me. Geralt as a protagonist. The game itself was not perfect, but I was in. I thought the art on Steam looked cool. I mean, just different than I'd ever seen. And then Witcher 2 came out around the same time as Skyrim. And I remember, like, you know, doing the Skyrim for the first time. And I ended up going back to Skyrim later, especially with mods and, like, loving it. Like, I'm definitely not going to say that Witcher 2 is better than Skyrim, but I remember being more drawn to Witcher 2. The only thing that drove me nuts is that you couldn't jump. For some reason, that drove me crazy. But the level design and the way the game progressed, and again, the story was so good, and the combat felt really good. And really, the side characters that filled out the story were just some of the best. I mean, obviously, right? And then Witcher 3 is probably my favorite game of all time. It slides into the 1 and 2 spot consistently for me for best game. And I don't have to go on and on about Witcher 3. But the game I do want to go on about is The Witcher Adventure Tales. And I think it's called... I can't remember what the official name is. Have you seen it, though? It's like you move around almost like on a board game, like a top-down. And then your battles... So you go around and collect gold and stuff. But as you make your way through these maps and you break down like objects and stuff, your battles are Gwent games.
Right, that's what I was thinking of. I was thinking in my head. I was like, "What is the thing called? What's the thing?" Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I believe it's a Thronebreaker or Witcher Tale. Actually, just let me look. I have like a ridiculous amount of hours in that game. Witcher Tales. Yeah, Thronebreaker with the Witcher Tales. I apologize. I should have had it up in handy. But this game is a top-down RPG, and like I said, you go into these PVE battles, and then you're playing Gwent, and it's like a really interesting. Because Gwent's not like the greatest card game of all time, but it has some really cool mechanics. And then when you add in PvE strategies and bosses, it turns Gwent into an astounding game, in my opinion. Like, it works very well as a combat piece instead of just a full game. Because the other game in the franchise would be Gwent, right? And I think that's the weakest. I think it's like a 3 out of 5, 2 out of 5 maybe, because I played a lot of other card games competitively, like MTG and Hearthstone. So it's not my favorite. But when you use it as a device for combat in a top-down RPG, almost board game setting, it is a blast. And the narrative is as good as the main Witcher series by far. Incredible. Also, you get some you're not Geralt, right? So you're not playing as Geralt of Rivia. You're getting a different perspective, and you're getting legit lore and backstory from Witcher. I mean, I think it's just as good as Witcher 3. Like, I think it's like, it would not be my favorite game because it's simpler, right? But it's an incredible, I think it's like a 10 out of 10 game. So for me, even though there's only really there's 5 games in the franchise if you count Gwent, I think 4 of them, if you take an account for what they are in the time, like they're 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 games. Yeah. And if they release Witcher Tales 2 tomorrow, there's gonna be more and more.
I had to look it up really quick. I was like, who owns the rights to this? I was like, I didn't know if it was one of those things where the author still is the one who owns it and they lease it out. Like, say, like J.K. Rowling does. Like, she still owns Harry Potter, you know, and leases it out. So saying right here, and again, so CD Projekt Red looks to me like they own The Witcher outright. So now there's books originally, but what I'm reading here,
and a TV show.
What I'm reading here, and again, this is the internet, so who knows? It says the author of the books sold the rights to CD Projekt Red in 1997, so the whole thing, and turned down profit sharing for a fixed sum of 35,000 PLN, whatever that is. Like, they're like a German company or something, aren't they? So it's like whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Swedish.
Swedish?
Maybe?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so they said it's according to Google, it's the equivalent of basically 10 grand.
Yikes.
Ugh!
I do feel like he's been paid royalties and such, because I think he's actually spoke about his success.
Okay,
it,
but it's just like, ugh, God.
You were so close.
I mean, yeah, it's not like sometimes I think about like George Lucas selling Star Wars for $4 billion. And then, you know, they release The Force Awakens and it makes like, you know, almost $2
billion. $4
billion. And you're just like, George, come on, man. But it's like, he's like, dude, $4 billion is a lot of money. I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it anymore, kind of a thing. You know, it's like,
yeah,
like I think he knew, like, I could release another Star Wars movie right now and make $1 billion. Like, it's not like I just don't want to do it. But to look at that and just be like, oh, man, just. Sold the rights to that. Yeah, that's crazy. But actually,
right?
What's even more crazy, though, is actually you got to think about a company like CD Projekt Red. Back in the 90s, they weren't like a big – late 90s, they weren't a big sort of – developer.
It was a huge gamble.
And to take it on this book series that I don't think a lot of people like were super aware of. I mean, you're more the fantasy book guy.
They're translated, right? Yeah. So I don't think they were translated in the. I could be wrong. I don't think the Witcher series was translated in the 90s yet. I might be corrected on that later, but either way, it certainly wasn't the Witcher of today,
yeah,
at all. So that was a huge risk for CD Projekt Red, and I think it paid off.
I'd say so, especially with the TV show and everything. Yeah, so it's huge, yeah. And they can do a lot. They can do a lot with it. I mean, I don't think Gwent has been it's still really big and successful. I don't think it's been as successful as they hoped, because I think they hoped it would have been Hearthstone, and it wasn't.
That's okay.
I'm actually surprised there really hasn't been a serious challenger to Hearthstone.
The only one that there is MTG Arena, right? Because MTG is so big.
Yeah. Actually, the Pokemon online game, you can play it on an app. It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun, yeah.
I may or may not have been playing that at some point in this pandemic.
Yeah. Oh, I picked it up. I picked it up again. I was like, yeah, let me dive back into that. Ooh, okay. Well, I'm gonna go with my final one here. If I had to take a guess, I think Jimmy and I probably. I'm gonna say we both have this on our list. I'm not gonna. It might be. We might not. But so if you don't, that's great, because then we can have another series to talk about. But I'm going to talk about a series to which I can honestly consider every game in it roughly a 10 out of 10. To me, this, I would say, in terms of overall top to bottom quality, I would say that there are two video game franchises I can think of where you can view almost every game as a 10 out of 10. And that is The Legend of Zelda, and that is Metal Gear. Okay, and so that's where I'm at. Is Metal Gear your third? It's not.
It's okay. Not. That's dope. And I meant to list.
That's great.
I meant to list it on my, like, I left it off, and I have a reason.
That's great, because then we get to talk about another franchise, which is probably Big Mother Truckers. And so, but no, I mean, where do I even begin with the Metal Gear franchise? To even try to begin to explain the story is so impossible. Okay, like it's so absolutely impossible to even try to begin. But I mean, top to bottom, every game is, and of course, obviously, I mean, just look at my channel. Look at the channel art for this. I mean, you know, you'll know that's how much I love it. Every time I dive back into the series, I'm just blown away at how phenomenal the story is and how good it is and how much I love these characters, and they just never get old for me. And I've played all of the games. I mean, I've definitely beaten Metal Gear Solid 2 at least 50 times in my life. At least.
Oh my goodness.
At least 50.
For me, it's probably five.
I mean,
I thought that was,
I mean, at least 50 times have I beaten Metal Gear Solid 2. And that might be an understatement.
Oh my God.
It's so good. I just do run. It's honestly, for some reason, I don't know why, but it was, I think it was when I was living in Portland the first time. And I would fly back to Ohio for Christmas, and I'd be staying with my dad for like 2 weeks or whatever. And so I still had a lot of my old video game stuff there. And so I would just pop in the Metal Gear games and start plowing through them again. And so somehow Metal Gear, almost like Die Hard, has turned into sort of a Christmas game for me. And for some reason, I played the Metal Gear series at Christmas. But yeah, I mean, I know the story is really complex. I mean, really, it's really complex. But I love the characters. Solid Snake, Big Boss, who is my favorite character. I even love Raiden, Revolver Ocelot. All of the characters. I love actually how forward thinking really Hideo Kojima is, even in sort of this odd, you know, sexualized, creepy, weird, you know, like, vision that he has. I mean, some of the things he was talking about, you know, like, you think about, like, So, you know, like one of the, like the story of Metal Gear Solid, the original, right, for not the original game, but the first Metal Gear Solid for PlayStation, because there was Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2. Like the idea of this big robotic tank, okay, that's kind of a far stretch, right? The stealth technology and stuff like that, that was not that far of a stretch then. We had like stealth bombers and all of these things. And the idea that, hey, with railgun technology, we could launch an undetectable nuclear warhead. Well, we have railguns on our Navy. There's a Navy warship right now that has a railgun on it. Okay? I mean, he's not far off. He's not some of these things. We theoretically could launch a nuclear warhead right now with a railgun, and it would be undetectable. Because of, you know, you lose the propulsion technology. The idea of nanomachines, the idea of a lot of this stuff, and yes, it's like futuristic and weird and all this stuff, but the idea of drones. It was a big Metal Gear Solid 2 is like kind of one of the underlying things is drone technology and government surveillance and a lot of these things. Yeah. But that's like what is the edginess of the series and what like makes the series sort of like cool and fun. But underneath it is a very well told drama about war and about soldiers and about why we fight. And they're all told in these like tiny little moments and all of these things. And it's so great. And honestly, I think it has honestly even surpassed Metal Gear Solid 2 for me, Metal Gear Solid 5. And the game is so amazing, and it's not even really fully finished because of all of the fallout. But there's just so many great moments in that where and Kiefer Sutherland replacing David Hayter sort of as Snake for his almost no dialogue in the game. There's so many just sort of interesting moments kind of told in this game about like sort of soldiers and what they go through and stuff like that. The stuff between Venom Snake and Quiet, sort of these sort of like oddly weird romantic moments. But they're like buried inside like war and like disease and just all of these things. And then Metal Gear Solid 3 is like probably the best in the series, especially if you're a Metal Gear Solid fan. The idea of Big Boss having to take down his mentor, the Boss, right? Who's this legendary soldier, who like gave birth on a battlefield and all this stuff. But then you get down to it and it's like she sacrificed everything like for her country. And was painted as a war criminal when really she should have been painted as a war hero, and like nobody will ever know it except for like Snake, and he now has to live with that. And how does he progress forward? And then you get to Metal Gear Solid 4, which I think is it's the best story of the series. I mean, it's that game is so absurd that it's even a PS3 game. I mean, it's insane to think that game.
I've never got to play it.
You have no idea what you're missing. In fact, the sort of story behind it is that this is supposed to be like a launch game for PS3, and Hideo Kojima wanted it to be two Blu-ray discs, and Sony said no because we're going from like DVDs to Blu-rays, which is like, you know, 4 gigs to 50, and Sony was like, you cannot do that, because they're like, we have to show that Blu-ray is like the coolest thing, and he's like, well, I think it should be bigger, you know, like so absurd. But the story in that game, which is the end really of the series, there's one game that sort of takes place after Metal Gear Rising, which is even good in its own right, and it's like its own weird action slash hack and
it's
slash
fun, it's fun, yeah.
But Metal Gear Solid 4 is really like the end of the end of the Snake storyline, and my god, the crazy thing about that is there are moments in this game in which you are fighting on top of a this arsenal gear which houses all of these Metal Gear rays and all of this stuff, and it's like it's going to take over the world, and you're like fist fighting on top of it as it's replaying the music throughout the entire series. And it's like, Solid Snake versus Liquid Ocelot, which is Revolver Ocelot, who has like his arm cut off and has the sewn on arm of Liquid Snake, and then goes through like mind therapy to make it appear as if he's actually been overtaken by Liquid Snake so that they can fool the Patriots, who are like this shadow government running behind everything. And it's like, it's so absurd and like so hard to follow. But nothing in that game. And there's a scene where Solid Snake has to crawl through like lasers to disarm like arsenal gear or whatever. Nothing in that game even comes remotely close to the ending of the game, which is just simply a conversation between Solid Snake and Big Boss in this graveyard. And it is like an hour cutscene. it's the cutscenes of that game are absurdly long, and it's awesome. And nothing in the entire series comes close to that moment. And that's, to me, why it is, if not the best, one of the best video game franchises ever made. Because, again, at the end of the day, no matter how awesome the gameplay is and how ridiculous the story is and cool with people with big guns shooting stuff, it all comes back down to the story itself, and that the story is so good in that it can overshadow everything else and like remind you ultimately why you're here. And it's about like soldiers and why we fight and why we do the things we do and like emotions and all of this stuff, like the most basic human functions. And it's perfect. It is perfect. There it is.
I mean, Metal Gear Solid 2 is in my top five favorite games ever, and I'm so envious. So like, think about this. So I played Metal Gear Solid 2, right? And I played on Xbox when they did the Substance or whatever it was edition, and at the end it says, the Patriots have been dead for how many years or whatever he said, right? And I still don't know what happened because I haven't got to play it, and they haven't re-released it, and they haven't. There's no way to play it unless you go buy PS3.
Metal Gear Solid 2?
Metal Gear Solid 3. Or, I'm sorry, not 3. 4.
Yes. Metal Gear Solid 4 is the sequel because there's like prequels and stuff. Yes. The only way to play Metal Gear Solid 4 currently is on a PS3. You are correct on that.
And that is where it hurts. And so Metal Gear Solid, I played 3. I never beat it, but I played 3 at a friend's house because I was at Xbox, right? But I remember playing Metal Gear Solid 5, and I got to the point where he meets, I think, Quiet, the sniper lady. But the thing that it turned me off about that game was actually the base building.
Yeah.
I don't like base building in any games, which is funny because I just talked about how much I enjoyed playing Valheim. But like when it's like thrown in for content, like I hated Fallout 4's base building. Like I did the bare minimum. And I remember just getting a little bit frustrated with the idea of like going out and doing missions and flying out and like prepping. So it just didn't, unfortunately, Metal Gear Solid 5 just didn't mesh with me. I remember the graphics, the gameplay, everything phenomenal, but the flow of the game did not feel.
See, I love like simulation games like SimCity and all this stuff. So it's like for me, I was like, oh God, I love this even more because I have to like go out and steal resources. Well,
I like SimCity too. Yeah. For some reason I wanted like Metal Gear Solid 2 again, kind of really is what I wanted. And it just was a different flowing
and
game.
I think see that, especially with 5, because unfortunately the problem with 5's base building is it's not like you're like saying, oh, I want like this gun to be here and this to be here, and it actually does stuff. It's like literally all just in menus. And it's kind of like you don't really see your base doing anything cool. And so that's how I totally get that about Metal Gear Solid 5. Especially,
I kind of felt like it was hand-jammed for content in a way. And that's probably not true, but that's just how
I would encourage you. I would encourage you to check out Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, which is... Peace Walker was a PSP game, and it's the game that takes place before Metal Gear Solid 5. And it feels like it's in between in story wise. It's in between. Well, it goes Metal Gear Solid 3, Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops, Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. Then, but it's like the direct prequel to Metal Gear Solid 5. Unless you consider Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, which is like just part of
which
my,
I liked.
Right. Right. 'Cause there it's just a mission and it's sort of like a demo, whatever. Yeah.
Well, that got me hyped for 5. And then in 5,
the gameplay and everything, so much fun. So yeah, I get it. I get it. But Peace Walker, it's kind of similar, but I think it's done better. I do think the base building stuff in Peace Walker is more kind of fun than it is in 5. Now, 5, what I think is fun is like the weapon building, like the where you're like, "Oh, I'm grinding for this gun, then this gun, you get it." And you're like, "Oh, I can do so much more now."
Yeah, I think so. For me, like, I'm not a huge stealth person. Like, I'm actually, which is the first time I played Metal Gear Solid 2, I thought I was getting another Halo. I was a dumb kid. I didn't know, right? So I played it one time and I said, "Oh, this sucks. You gotta be quiet. I don't like it. Right? Threw it away. Then I'm bored once. I think the following summer, I think it's a whole year later after I picked it up for like used $20 at EB Games or whatever. And I'm like, I'm going to play this. I'm going to get through it, you know, whatever. And I played it and I fell in love with the story, just like you said. I mean, I fell in love with the story. And for me, 5 didn't give me just like, I felt like I was doing a lot of other stuff that wasn't story. And I was just there for the story. And that's why it's such a shame. I will play Metal Gear Solid 4 if they ever re-release it. Like, I will play it day one in there. And I think that's the only reason why I couldn't put it on my list is because I haven't played 4 and I didn't love 5.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm like 15 years removed from the franchise.
That's fair. The story is so complex and it can be a problem because you're like, where do I even begin with this? And I don't even know, honestly, if like I could tell you a way in order in which you should play the games, because I don't think playing it chronologically, you would get the same thing from it. Like, once you've beaten it playing it chronologically, you know, like in terms of how, like, timeline wise, would work, but I do think you would get more out of playing Metal Gear Solid 5 had you played Metal Gear Solid 4, even though theoretically there's not really a lot of carryover, but there's enough to where you're like, "Oh, okay, I get it.
It's kind of the reward for playing the franchise, you know?
Right.
I mean, what a series, but like, I'm with you. Like, the story of Metal Gear is one of a kind. One of a kind. How cool. Yeah.
Hopefully someday, there's rumors someday it'll get turned into a movie. There is a book. There is a novelization, I believe, of 1 and 2. But I from what I've read, they're older, and from what I've read, they're not very good. But I do think it would make an amazing book series if somebody were to adapt it. I've actually over time thought the way I would what I think I would do, because I think a movie would just be too hard, a movie series would be too hard. I think it should be an anime, and I would jump.
Yeah.
I would start with Metal Gear Solid 3, and I would sort of tell the story via an anime and do like 4 or 5 seasons, and then just be like, "Okay, we're going to tell sort of Metal Gear Solid 3 here, Metal Gear Solid whatever. Yeah.
I would eat that up. I would love that.
So,
I mean, all right. I've heard that they're going to remaster 2.
You can get 2 on PC on GOG.com. GOG,
wow,
GOG.
That's awesome.
There's actually a really good patch for it, which lets you play it in like wide, a lot of like modern stuff. It turns into some more of sort of the HD version. Yeah,
that's really cool. I could have sworn I saw something for PS5 saying they were going to remaster either 2 or 3.
There's a lot of rumors about that. Yeah, that could get,
or I that mean it, that it would be even, excellent
or
idea.
That it could even get remade. Yeah.
If it gets the Final Fantasy VII remake treatment, I'm in, dude. Yeah. I'm in.
All right, Jimmy, what is your final franchise?
I mean, if you had to guess, what do you think it
Well,
is?
I mean, as we said, Big Mother Truckers only has, I think, 2 games, so I don't think it's that. I was thinking maybe Divinity, but I was like, does Divinity have enough games?
It does have like 4 or 5 games, but I haven't played the others. So I've only played Original Sin and Original Sin 2. So I can't count that, unfortunately.
Let me think here for a second. What is your franchise? Can you give me a hint as to what type of a game series it is?
It's how about this? We talked about, you said you had a Die Hard, and I actually mentioned this on a previous podcast when we talked about our favorite Christmas games. I said there's a game that I just always play every Christmas.
Oh, God.
I re-download it.
What did we?
I load up the mods.
Oh, okay. I know. Skyrim, right? Elder Scrolls.
It's the Elder Scrolls.
See, I was thinking about Elder Scrolls. I was thinking about it because when Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, which is going to be a PC Xbox exclusive. By the way, they kind of said, because they said, well, we'll see. Then for me, yeah, Elder Scrolls will be on there, but Morrowind I just didn't dive as much into. So for me, it's like just Oblivion and Skyrim. And so I was like, well, I can't really pick it just off those two. But yeah, I mean, obviously Oblivion. I love both. Oblivion and Skyrim for me are like, I'll play the hell out of those.
So I've went back to playing Morrowind. It is very rough. I know there's like a remaster, all this stuff, but Morrowind was good. Morrowind introduced me, let me know that these kind of games existed, and I had fun. Oblivion, I remember it taking Morrowind and Oblivion on my Xbox.
Oh God, yeah.
Taking an hour to load levels. I mean, just like you're like, people would be like, "What kind of game is this?
You
like,
don't
what
even
is
know,
this game,
bro?"
Yeah, like, and I just remember like sitting at my friend Andrew's house and like, I mean, quite literally waiting 30 minutes for the game to load, and him just being like, "Dude, once we're in, like, it's amazing." And just like experiencing that, and I have went back and played. I mean, I don't have to go into how much I've played Skyrim. It's absurd. And I play it at least once a year. It's my Christmas game. I always reinstall it, go around and do things. But quite recently, in the last year, I went back and played Oblivion, and I added some mods to it. And I'm going to be honest, like, even just like this past week, I've been itching. Like, I've been like, I think I might, because I read, like you said, I read a lot of fantasy. I read a lot of medieval fantasy. I like the worlds. And the one thing that you can get out of Oblivion and Skyrim is that you can kind of have your own story.
Oh,
like, you can kind of just tell your own story in your head. And I've been really considering loading up Oblivion, putting the mods, and just like, just getting lost. Mm-hmm. Just going out, hunting, doing my thing. Or maybe I'll play Skyrim again. I do feel like I'm at the edge of Skyrim now, where like, it's been a lot. Like, I don't know how much more I can go through Skyrim.
Yeah.
Like, I've beat that game 20 times.
It's so...
like, and I didn't even beat it the first 5 years it was out. Like, I just played it. I never beat it. And then I started beating it. I kept beating it, you know? So.
It's so hard to compare the two games, because they're as similar as they are, they really could not be more different as much as I
it's
view
true.
It. I am in the camp where, as much as I love Skyrim, if Skyrim had come out first and Oblivion had come out second, so, you know, so think like, okay, well, now Skyrim looks like Oblivion and it's a little bit older and Oblivion
right.
is newer, I think people would say Oblivion is better. Because
I 100% agree.
There are things I like about both. There are things I love about. But actually, one of my favorite sort of video game conversations is who would win in a fight: a maxed out, like, they both get to exist in their own engine and combat each other, and it's like, who would be more powerful: a maxed out Oblivion character or a maxed out Skyrim character? And I actually think a maxed out Oblivion character would steamroll a Skyrim character, because there's so many things you can do in Oblivion that like don't exist in Skyrim. Like, the only advantage Skyrim has in terms of like, if those two theoretical characters would fight, is the shout, because the shout is not something that's really in Oblivion. But in Oblivion, like, you can run so fast, you could, like, your magic system is like absurd.
It's
OP,
bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the world of Skyrim, and I love that there are slightly different regions and stuff like that, but it doesn't come close to Oblivion. Like, every region feels different and unique.
I think it has more charm.
Yeah.
It just has more charm. And that's the thing that blew my mind, dude, this year when I went back and played Oblivion. I mean, I think I threw in, like, an HD texture pack and weather. I don't even think it was that much. You know, Skyrim, I can literally spend, like, 60 gigs on mods. And I just went to Oblivion, I mean, fairly vanilla. And, dude, I mean, I just was walking around like, oh, my God, I forgot how good this environment is. Like, I forgot how truly grand and, like, just how charming those areas were. And I've been waiting to get – I'm going to get back into it. Like, probably in the next few weeks, I could see myself, like, sitting down for a few hours. And I'm not saying I'm going to beat it or anything, but, like, just existing in those worlds, they're the best. And another one that a lot of people – hated when it first came out, and I was a beta tester for, was ESO, Elder Scrolls Online. And a lot of people didn't like that game. I got stuck in a chest in level one and I quit and I was pissed, right? I can tell you as of today, I haven't played the game in over a year, but I probably have close to 2,000 hours in ESO. And at one point was in the top 100 PvP Nightblades. I was really in on ESO for a long time. And I think it's the best MMO on the market as far as like being up to date, having actual like really interesting combat, and the way that they have ended up supporting the game. It is plagued by DLC fracturing, kind of like Destiny in a way. But whenever you look at like just the core mechanics of the game and the content that is available, and there's still a huge player base. I love ESO. I think it's a great game. It's not what a lot of people wanted, but I still think it's a great MMO. I think it's won MMO of the year like 3 or 4 years in a row now. I should say from some sites. It's always that or Final Fantasy or if WoW has a good expansion. But like what I'm saying is it's always in the conversation. So for them to take a huge jump into the MMO, have a rough start, and then patch it out, and it was a game I ended up loving. I mean, for a long time, I was just an ESO guy. So I love it. The card game that they came out with, the mobile game and stuff, whatever,
right.
You know, whatever. And I believe that there's some earlier computer games, that I had played when I was very young, but I don't remember them. Like I do Morrowind, Oblivion, Skyrim, and ESO. Like those four entries, I've lost thousands of hours of my life to, and I don't regret
and the
any of them.
And the I will say, you know, horse armor, whatever, like for DLC, but the DLC like side quests are, were 100% worth the price of admission. The Knights of the, what is it, the one where you get like the Templar armor in Oblivion, Knights of the Nine, is that what it's called? Knights of the Nine or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's Knights of the Nine.
Whatever. Yeah, but that was freaking sick. You go around, you get all the armor, then your dude looks like a boss, and you're like,
Knights of the Nine.
Right,
yeah,
and then,
right.
And then, my God, the, what's the other one that, what's, oh God, what the... The one where you go to the other world in Oblivion. Oh my God, I'm blanking on it. What's the second one called? The Sacred Isles? Is that what it's called?
I think it's Sacred Isles, and I always get it mixed up with the Skyrim ones. Not to mention that some of the fan-made mods for those games. I mean, Jesus. I mean, the Forgotten City DLC for Skyrim is a better story than the main Skyrim story. And it's made by one guy in his basement, and he's tremendous. And then you have Enderal, which came out with a book as well, which is amazing. I always forget the Oblivion DLCs because I think I have it all bundled, so I never really made a conscious decision of buying them, right? I just remember Knights of the Nine because I looked awesome after it. It was so good.
Now I gotta look it up because it's gonna drive me nuts. Download a cunt.
I do think Oblivion's the best Elder Scrolls game, though, for sure.
Yeah, let me see here. Downloadable content, later releases, all the stuff. Thieves Den, trying to see here. What exactly was it called? It's going to drive me nuts. Shivering Isles. That's what it is. The Shivering.
I was looking at
The Shivering Isles. That was such a cool, unique. Sherogath. Sherogath. Yeah, the Dark Prince of Madness, right? And like Madness and Order. Such a cool, just a concept. It's like these two different like aisles you go to. There's still so much of like the mystery, like the lore, and that they're so good at like crafting the lore, right? Like the dwarves, like we still don't know what the heck the deal is with the dwarves is. And
you should check out the Forgotten City. It's a free mod, and it's 10 hours, and you go to the Forgotten City of the dwarves.
Yeah,
and this dude, you should really check it out. Like it is. It's outstanding. So, has its own soundtrack.
So I think I'm with you. I do think Oblivion is better than Skyrim. Skyrim easier to play. Skyrim's easier to play and stuff like that. But I just think it's more so Skyrim itself. While it is gorgeous, I love like especially like once you mod it and stuff like that. I mean, just like the idea of the setting. But it does get a little old as opposed to where Oblivion, each sort of region in Oblivion feels totally different.
And I prefer that.
Right. It makes Cyrodiil
prefer that
feel way bigger than Skyrim, right? Although I always play as a Nord anyway and stuff like that. And Oblivion's a buggy game. There's a lot of bugs in the game, you know, stuff like that. the dragons are cool until they get really old. in Skyrim. You know, it's like, oh my god, here comes the dragons. And then certain side quests I think were better than others. I love the arena in Oblivion. Like, I thought that was cool. The Dark Brotherhood, I think, is better in Skyrim. It's better in Skyrim than it is in Oblivion.
Way better in Skyrim.
The Thieves Guild. Good in both. It's good in both, but I think I'd give the edge to Skyrim. I think I like Skyrim just because you get sort of raven armor. I forget, but yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Brotherhood and the Thieves, really the guilds, even the story.
I think the Mage's Guild is better in Oblivion.
Yeah, you know, I could see that. I don't know. I mean, you can't really pick. It's, like, you're not going to pick a loser.
No. It's just kind of which do you like better and stuff, yeah.
But there's a personality and a charm to the regions of Oblivion that just get me
and
excited.
I think
just love
the character creation and, like, the ways you can go in Oblivion are... like, Skyrim, I always feel like you're pretty bogged down to, like, okay, I'm going to play this one as a rogue, as this. Whereas in Oblivion, you're kind of like... you feel like you can kind of do, like, whatever you want. Obviously they expand upon like the vamp being a vampire and stuff like that and the werewolf, and so that's pretty cool in Skyrim. Being a vampire in Oblivion is fucking terrible. It's so awful. You're like, anytime you get bit, you're like, oh my god, like, it's so awful. And being a vampire is not fun in Oblivion. But, like, the magic and stuff like that. You know, then, of course, in Oblivion, you, like, can take your boots off and you basically have 100% stealth. You know, I mean, I remember, like, being at a buddy's house and he had Oblivion. And I was like, why is your guy in, like, full armor except for boots? He's like, you don't make any noise. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, you have 100% sneak. He's like, you can wear full armor and then just take your boots off in Oblivion. You don't make any.
Tremendous.
He's like, oh, my god. So, yeah, I mean, they're both fantastic. And I'm sure there are people out there like, how are you guys not talking about Morrowind? And Morrowind is great. I mean, especially for when it came out. There's tons of great mods for it and stuff like that. And, you know, that's where the sort of main theme comes from. And, like, the soundtracks in all the games are just phenomenal.
Yeah, and, you know, I know that there's been a project for a long time, but I think they ran into copyright stuff, but I'm not sure about that. Like, if it's halted the project, but they were putting Morrowind in the Skyrim engine.
Oh, that's a big thing. Yeah, more Oblivion and Skywind and all those things. Yeah. Yeah, Bethesda, I will say, there, and who knows, now that they're owned by Microsoft, might get a little more lax. They have been sort of shady in the past and kind of like,
especially
comes to like hacking
for a company.
Yeah,
especially for a company that relies on the customer to finish their games. Because Fallout 4 was fine, and then it got great with mods. It's like they basically put out this game and are like, hey, you guys finish it. And that's really sad. I'm nervous about Elder Scrolls 6, I'll be honest. Like,
because of
I'm
Fallout 4
day one.
And Fallout 76.
Yes.
I'm a little bit nervous. Now that Microsoft... I think it's going to be a while before the game comes out, because I think Microsoft is going to sort of step in. And I think Microsoft... I, honest to God, as much as I don't really plan on getting one, because I would rather buy a PlayStation 5, but I think... I love Microsoft right now. I love Xbox right now. I think from their standpoint, I think what's his name, Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, so much better than Don Mattis. It's not even close. He's great. I think he is great for Microsoft. I think he is great for Xbox. He's all about the games. And I hope he stays with that company for a really long time. And I think he will. You can just tell he loves it. Xbox has done a lot of really good things. Ori and the Blind Forest. I mean, just a lot of these games, you're like, I cannot believe this is Microsoft that runs this. I mean, Halo, yeah, they got to figure that out. Gears of War, I think they've done good things with and stuff like that. And so, obviously, Forza, they knock out of the park every time and stuff like that. So, I think getting Elder Scrolls is going to be big, because if they want to at all sort of compete with Sony in terms of these intellectual properties, they're gonna they're going to need some big RPGs. They constantly try to get success in Japan, and it never works. Just never works for them. And buying Bethesda, I don't know that that's going to help you, because that's a lot of Western audiences. But maybe you just double down on your Western audience and say, well, we could be the kings of this. You know,
I think that's exactly what they're doing. Yeah.
So.
It would be weird to see a exclusive Elder Scrolls game. I mean, you know, it is interesting because my PC is getting older now. My 1080 Ti isn't what it used to be, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, would I buy an Xbox, play Elder Scrolls 6, or would I just rebuild my computer?
Get it on PC.
Yeah, I think I'd just rebuild my computer. I have a PS5. It's wonderful, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, tremendous. Xbox Game Studios here. Let me just look really quick here and see, like, some of their franchises, right? Because it's so weird. You kind of have to think about it for a while. Like, what exactly do they own? I mean, they bought Minecraft. That's a freaking win. You know.
I would say that it paid for itself. That's a win.
You know, then you have to go back. Microsoft Flight Simulator. Have you looked at the most recent one?
Yeah.
That game is insane. Like, just to...
I mean, that game's been
I know,
insane.
But what it is now is, like, insane to think about. Like, just in terms of, like, you can fly, like, literally, like, you can fly anywhere in the world. It's crazy. It's
Could
like,
you imagine?
I think the game's, like, over a terabyte. Like, it's so massive. It is. It's, like, massive, this insanely massive game. They do own a bunch of franchises. Cool. Hopefully, that at some point they will bring back. I know their work, they said... Now, if they bring it back, it wasn't teased. Fable, right? Are they doing another Fable?
They are.
Yes,
yeah,
to be
no,
announced. That's correct. Yes.
Now I'm going to tell you what. If they bring back Fable, and they have Elder Scrolls, and they're not on and one of them's not on PC, I can see myself getting an Xbox. But Fable will be on PC too. It'll be on PC.
They need to port freaking Fable 2 to PC.
Fable 2
is phenomenal. Fable 3 was okay. But again, we're talking a new thing. It's like there's a franchise. Fable 4 comes out and it could boost Fable into my top franchises.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. And you know, I'm trying to think of other franchises that they had and could revive.
Let me see here. So they own Age of Empires because they own Rare. So that's Banjo-Kazooie, Battletoads, Blinks the Cat. Yeah. Here's a character a lot of people. They own Conker, Crackdown. God, they tried that and it was a disaster. Crimson Skies is a super fun game. I think it's on PC, but it was also on the original Xbox. It was kind of like their thing. That's fun.
Yeah.
They now own. Well, let me tell you what. Now Microsoft owns something bigger than better than Halo. They own another first-person franchise after they bought Bethesda, Doom. Because the Doom games,
Doom is big, man.
Sweet. They own the Elder
Running
Scrolls,
for Game of the Year last
Evil
year.
Evil Within, Killer Instinct,
Dishonored.
Really no, is Dishonored Bethesda? Yes, it is.
It is. Fallout.
Dark. Bethesda. And they did tease that they're going to be bringing Perfect Dark.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Dude, Perfect Dark Zero for
the
360
Quake.
As a launch title was so
Quake,
fun.
Because Quake is Bethesda. Let me see here. Yeah, geez, now I got to look at Bethesda. You know what? I mean, we're just taking our time here.
I mean, Bethesda was the biggest acquisition they could have made, I think, at the time. Something that was actually going to sell.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So Fallout, that's huge, obviously. Bethesda Game Studios. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of their thing. I think Wolfenstein, too. Now they own Wolfenstein.
Yep. Wolfenstein's under
that
umbrella.
The newer
Wolfenstein games
are
amazing.
Good. Yeah. Well, now...
Honestly, I would say they're a bit underrated, honestly.
Dishonored, Doom, Elder Scrolls, Evil Within, Fallout, Prey. That was sort of a cool thing. Yeah, Rage. That was also another... list of Bethesda Softworks video games. This is what I was looking for. So you have to look at like what they actually own here, because they've done a lot of things that obviously they don't own. Doom, Quake, Blink, Haunted the Demon's Forge. That was a fun game. Dishonored, Evil Within. Yeah, that's really kind of it. Okay, I guess that really is kind of it. They just kind of keep pushing their stuff they own. Well, they'll build some new ones.
Yeah, I mean, That's a pretty good starting point. The thing that's going to be hard is, as you know, we're both PC gamers. I'm not buying, like, unless if they make Fable and like two other ones, Xbox exclusives, they're not going to. So I'll just upgrade my PC again.
That's fine. Yeah.
You know, which is fine, but I guess it's just like, it's this weird thing.
Now that they own these people, do you think they said, hey, instead of having Microsoft make it, should we just have Bethesda make Fable?
I'd die.
Because it'd be bad.
You know what? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I want them to make it. Like, Fable's like a different RPG, right?
It's supposed to be kind of quirky.
When I get a Skyrim. Yeah, and it's complete. Right. Like, I never played a Fable game and felt like, oh, this is unfinished. And Fable for 3. Better or for worse, a lot of Bethesda games come out of the oven early.
Yeah. I mean, well, Fable 3 was buggy as hell.
Well, that is true. Right. All right. Fable 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Fable 3.
Fable 3 was
fine.
It was just, it was like a step sideways, not a step forward or backwards.
I don't know if giving it to Bethesda would solve any of the issues that Fable 3 had, I guess, is what I'm saying. I don't know. I mean, I would love to see, you know, whoever led the charge on Fable 2 and Fable 1 to really lead the charge. But who knows if they're even still around. But I wouldn't be – it's not like I wouldn't buy it if Bethesda made it. I would just be like, let's see. Like, let's see. And are they going to put it on Bethesda's engine? That's another thing.
Well, it's Microsoft's engine now.
I could do a whole rant. That's right.
So
– it's crazy, man. It's really weird to think that like you probably won't see Elder Scrolls 6 on a PlayStation. That's crazy.
Probably not.
Because Skyrim plays on everything. It plays on calculator. Yeah, you know, it plays Switch on. The gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, for what it is, right? I mean, it's you can play it, you know, on the couch on whatever. So that's pretty cool. So.
I wonder if it'll be Xbox Gamer exclusive, and then you can only get mods through Game Pass. God, like that would be bad.
That would kill it. That would be kill it. But bad. I think they're gonna start figuring out how they want to do that and everything. So,
I mean, Game Pass is a great deal. I got to play The Outer Worlds for $1 and beat it, which was that game was awesome. And I paid $1.
Game Pass is super cool.
I think that's Xbox's biggest leg up, other than obviously Bethesda, like having Game Pass and it actually feeling like it's worth it. But you know what, dude? I've been just getting free games out the wazoo on my PS5.
Oh.
Being like paying for the online service. Dude, I'm getting good games for free.
My PS4 library, not that I haven't upgraded to PS5, and even still, just like what you get in terms of like PlayStation Plus, because you like have to go and like buy the now I own it when I have PlayStation Plus. My God, dude, I have so many PS3 games downloadable, so many PS4 games, PS Vita games. I was like, dude, what do I do with all these things? I don't know. Like,
I got Control for free. I was like, well, okay then. Like, I'll take
Meanwhile, on Switch, I pay $20 a year and I can play, you know, NES and SNES games. But the big rumor is the 31st of this month, Nintendo's supposed to have something big planned. That's the big deal, is they're supposed to have something huge planned the 31st of this month.
It'll be a limited time release of Mario Party 2, and you can only get it for 30 minutes.
Well, what is this all about? I don't know. But the big rumor is N64 Online, which even still, that goes to show you, just like Nintendo, it's like, it was like a couple years ago when like Nintendo literally only took Breath of the Wild to E3, and it was like the number one most talked about game. They're like, yeah, you guys, like, literally, I don't know. They're talking about like all this stuff, and we're just like, yeah, have at it.
Yeah, here's the game.
It's called Legend of Zelda: The Breath of the Wild. 10 years. Okay, yeah, you can play it for the next 10 years. It's like the greatest video game ever made. So have at it.
It was kind of the spiritual successor to Skyrim in a lot of ways for me. Like, and it's unfortunate because I don't have, like, I'm actually not as into open world games as I once was. Like, I'm more likely to revisit an older open world game just because of the time that I have. And I feel like Breath of the Wild, like, it's such an amazing game, but I just don't have the time for it. And it really bumps me out. Because I know, like, what I've played, I probably put, like, 20 to 30 hours into it, and I can confidently say it's not my favorite game of all time, but it might be the best game I've ever played.
I think it is. It's the best game ever made. I think it's better than Ocarina of Time.
I couldn't argue.
I'll say it.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't argue. I mean, when I mean, you go to the physics of like knocking a thing off a boulder and then, or, you know, a ledge and hit the boulder and rolls it. I mean, come
easily
on.
1,000 hours into that game, and I still feel like there's new stuff every time I play it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a video game. That's $60. Oh, yeah. That's $60 video, you know.
And the videos online of people crazy. Doing ridiculous things. Where somebody's, like, the trick shots world. And stuff like that are just in. Yeah,
it's an alternate reality.
It is. So.
It's just as totally. Big as Skyrim. It's
awesome.
Amazing.
Awesome. All right. Well, Jimmy, hey, man, thank you for coming on, man. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on YouTube at the Fantasy Network. If you're into like Skyrim and things like that, what I do is I review fantasy books and sci-fi and a little bit of Stephen King. But really, fantasy is my mainstay. And if you want to come in, find some good recommendations, maybe you read back in the day and you don't know what to read now, well, I have filtered through all the trash to provide you 5-star recommendations. And I would love to have you over there just to chat. So you can find me there on YouTube, The Fantasy Network, and on Twitter at The Flockavelli. I'm always tweeting bookish things, video games, or really anything I feel like wasting my breath on. So I really appreciate you bringing me on, Matt. Absolutely. This is a lot of fun and one of the tougher questions
Absolutely.
I've had to answer.
You know what we should do a crossover where I read the first Witcher book, and then we could review.
Let's go.
The books, the games, the show, the whole deal. Because I've never read the books. I've never really played
universe.
The games. And I didn't really watch the season.
Oh, you didn't
The first episode was like really long. And it was just like at a time when I was like, I don't know. I just didn't really dive into it. I know it's amazing. And I've seen all the memes and GIFs and everything. And I love Henry Cavill. So I was like, all right. So I want to.
Yeah,
want to get it. And I have The Witcher 3. I have it on PS4. I think I could get it on Switch. And just play it there. The Switch port is like pretty impressive in that it runs well. But I do also have a maxed out PC, so I should really probably play it on PC. So yeah, I should probably do that. So awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, guys. You can find me anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros. And really quick, let me just say this. So I did rebrand the YouTube channel that was Box Trick into Super Gains Bros. Because it's just a lot easier to tell people. And I'm always like, because, you know, Jimmy, as you know, I'm on like a Game of Thrones podcast and all these other things. And so everyone's like,
everywhere.
Where can I find you? And I'm like, well, you can kind of. And so it's like, no. Let me just change everything. It's all Super Gains Bros. This podcast name will not change because it is and always shall be Box Trick. But just so you know, kind of like the corresponding YouTube channel where I've been doing reviews as well. So doing like short reviews of Genesis games and stuff like that. I did one for Uniracers, did one for Road Rash 3. I have one coming up for Ninja Turtles, Hyperstone Heist. As well as I have another Pokemon video that I worked on. Can you beat the game only using Tackle? And it was quite the adventure, let me tell you. took a long time. Found some science and still working on that video. There's a lot to it to really break down all of the math and all of the science and everything involved. And you can come see how that went. So with that, guys, as always, we want to thank you for listening.